welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous guest, Dallas Barnett, all the way from New Zealand. I'm very excited we have anybody from New Zealand. And instead of bringing a movie, we're just going to discuss his career. We're going to have some kind of fun. So we're going to freewheel this. Yes, I have notes, people. Don't worry. But this man can talk, so I may not need them. Welcome to the show, Dallas.
Hey, thanks for having me, mate.
So let's start at the very beginning. Why did you want to become an actor? I mean, this is not an easy field to do anything in.
Well, kind of a long story. I'm accidentally an actor, to be completely honest with you. I had typical career going on, several of them, as a matter of fact, and did voiceover for going on 25 years now. And I was in my agent's office, and a casting director for a New Zealand primetime soap opera came in, took one look at me, and said, you know, my God, I've been looking for you for 7 years. Can you act? And I'm like, I don't know. Can I? And she hired me on for pretty much to play the bad guy for a season of the highest rated primetime soap in New Zealand. So that's kind of how I got into it, and people saw me on the soap, and it just ballooned from there. And I mean, I've got onto some fairly big projects since that.
So when she discovered you, did you think, "Wow, this is my payday, this is it," or "Okay, I'll try this"?
It was more like, "Okay, yeah, I'll give it a shot." I did some acting in high school and college, but you know, you grow up and you kind of move away from kid dreams, and or so I thought, and now this is what I do full time. So
is it hard to find a gig in New Zealand, or is there enough work to keep you busy?
You know, here's the thing. I'm like a 300-pound tattooed malcontent looking with a resting golf face, and I'm kind of a niche, so whenever somebody's looking for a 300-pound gorilla to play a bad guy, I usually get a call without an audition.
That's pretty cool.
Especially since I've got the American accent down here. There's a lot of American productions coming down here because it's so inexpensive to shoot here with the foreign exchange and the government kick-ins with the help of the budget and all that. So I'm pretty well known down here as being professional and courteous and showing up on time. And you know, they say, "Hey, I need a 300-pound gorilla with an American accent." I was like, "Hey, call Dallas."
That's awesome. I think that's great. Some of your work, I guess maybe to more your voiceover work, you do a moose for a commercial.
Yeah, that was, I do several character voices. The moose one was a Dodge truck, I believe.
Or correct.
Chrysler, Chrysler Dodge. And there was going to go on to be like a whole series of commercials in that vein with a moose head sitting on a wall talking to a stuffed fish. There was going to be like 2 years of this stuff. And I don't know, it didn't go through, so we did one commercial and it was out. But it was a lot of fun to do. I mean, I got to play with my Bullwinkle voice.
I noticed that. I thought it was kind of cool. How many voices can you do?
You know, I have no idea. I've never really sat down and gone through them. I do quite a bit on the Power Rangers, where it goes from, you know, the goofy Bullwinkle voice all the way up to, "Oh, I'll get you, Power Rangers," one of those things. And it just, I don't know, I'm pretty easy with the voices, I guess.
Did you?
I mean, I don't do any like impersonations of celebrities or anything, but I have a fairly good range vocally, and I don't mind thrashing it for 3 or 4 hours in the studio.
When you go in to do voiceover work, how many pointers do they give you of what they're looking for?
There's always a director in the studio that will tell you, okay, this is really good, but can we try this just for safety? This is what we're going for, and can you emphasize this word and, you know, kind of cut back on this word a little bit? You know, we're trying to get this happening, and so there's always a director in the studio with you that tells you what they're looking for.
Now, when you do the Power Rangers work, did you just stumble on Power Rangers, or did somebody say, "Get Dallas to do it, he does great voices"? I mean, that's a pretty big gig, I would think.
Yeah, no, I've got a pretty fabulous voice agent. I've been with her for 20 years, and she knows my capabilities. She knows my availabilities, and you know, like I said, I'm pretty well known in the New Zealand industry here now for being all those things I mentioned before. And you know, I get two or three calls every year from Power Rangers and stuff like that for loop groups and other television work. So yeah, it's just, I've got a great agent.
Well, that's, I hear that a lot. Now, have you got to go to the Power Ranger set? Do you get to go to Power Ranger conventions?
No, I'd love to go to some Power Ranger conventions. I do some conventions for like Hobbit and Lord of the Rings and stuff like that, but never got to do a Spartacus or Power Rangers convention. They look like a lot of fun.
Hold on, I didn't know you were on Spartacus. I apologize. I must have missed that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I had like 34 seconds on screen and one foul-mouthed tirade.
How is working on Spartacus? That show's insane. Even for 34 seconds, who cares?
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I mean, I met a lot of people that I'm still friends with on the set. I got to work with Barry Duffield, who played Lugo, several times. I mean, Barry and I have been friends since that soap opera I was telling you about. We met on that set, and he was, I guess, the one who recommended me to bring me into Spartacus. And we work together quite often.
That must be pretty cool to have friends go, hey, get this guy. I can help you out. That really must be helpful in your industry.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the thing is with the entertainment industry, it has less to do with what schools you went to or stuff like that and more of who you know. It's like if you can impress somebody with your skills and professionalism down the line, even if you don't get the part that they want to have you in for, they've got something that you're going to fit for. So it's less about what you know and more about who you know.
Now, I want to discuss the below 500K command commercial. 500. Do you remember that one, the gambling commercial you did?
Oh, no, I don't.
Well, I found it.
I do so many of them.
Oh, I did a lot of research in the back of. I guess what I'm asking.
Oh, no, that's the Cody's commercial, isn't it? That's the Cody's. It's an RTD. It's like a whiskey and Coke RTDs that's sold here in New Zealand.
Okay.
And that was a competition that they did that they needed somebody with an American accent, a big trailer voice with an American accent to do. And that was a lot of fun. I did that for about 2 years for that company.
Oh, wow. So my question is, are you at a party ever or somewhere out and you hear your voice on TV?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do Milwaukee Tools for New Zealand down here, and I've done them for 7 years. And I go into, like, a hardware store or a mechanic shop or something like that. Hey, you're the guy that does a Milwaukee Tools ad. I'm like, how did you know that? It was like, well, you know, your voice, it's kind of hard to miss.
So I guess my question is, does that make you feel good that you're recognizable? Like, at least your voice is?
Yes and no. I mean, a lot of people doing this chasing fame, and I'm not. I could care less if I'm a celebrity. I do this because I enjoy it, because I'm good at it, and because it pays well. I could really care less if I become A-list or even B-list, as long as I get to work.
I guess, how often do you work? Maybe we could start there. Do you work all year, or do you work when
you're on? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've constantly got stuff going on. I'm rarely without a booking.
I guess my next question, I don't want to interrupt anybody. I don't want anybody upset. So have you ever been on a set? Please don't tell me what if you didn't. And you hated it. You just wanted to leave after you got there.
There was one thing I did, one project I did several years ago. First time director. I loved the character. I completely enjoyed the role, but you know, I asked him to take my name off the credits. It was that bad.
So you're just like, I'm not. No, thank you.
No, don't put me on the credits. I'll take my name off IMDb and everything. Just, I don't want to be associated with this train wreck.
Wow. So you must have had positive experience on sets too, I presume.
Oh, yeah. More positive than negative by far. I think The Hobbit was probably the highlight of my career as far as feeling the love. I did a pretty recognizable part on the second Hobbit film. And this is really my first tentpole kind of film. I got into set and I got to meet Richard Armitage and Peter Jackson. I'm a huge Peter Jackson fanboy. I have been for like ever and ever and ever, all the way back to his early days. So I'm a little bit, you know, overwhelmed at this point. And I'm standing there in set in my costume and there's movement all around and, you know, the typical movie set kind of stuff. And everything goes like dead quiet all of a sudden. And I look up and here comes this like 6'2" gray ghost sliding through the prancing pony. And it's Ian McKellen. It's Sir Ian dressed as Gandalf. And everybody just shuts right down and just lets him pass, right? And Sir Peter takes me over to him and said, you know, Sir Ian, this is Dallas. He's playing Bill Ferney Sr. and yada, yada, yada. And I'm overwhelmed at this point. I stuck my hand out like a noob and I said, you know, Sir Ian, I'm a huge fan. I've loved all your work ever since, you know, The Keep in 1982 and yada, yada, yada. And just kept rambling on like this. And he looked me up and down and didn't stick his hand out. I'm like, oh, Jesus, I've just fanboyed out on Ian McKellen. And he goes, yeah, I mean, he just looks at me and in that voice, I can't do his voice, but you'll get the idea. He goes, no, no, dear boy, you're family now. We don't shake hands. And he reaches out and he hugs me. And here I am, this 300-pound, 6'2", hard-looking guy and dressed in full leather armor, damn near sobbing on Ian McKellen's shoulder.
That's a great story.
That was, I mean, I don't think I'll ever be able to top that as far as career highlight.
So I have to ask, did you go to see The Hobbit the day it was out and watch yourself?
Yeah, I did, actually. I got to go to the cast and crew screening and took my agent with me as my date. I was single at the time. And I said, well, look, you helped me get this far in my career. The least I can do is take you to the cast and crew screening and, you know, show my appreciation for what you've done for me. And we got down there and, you know, she's a little bit older than I am. And I was holding her hand the entire time when I saw the set come up and I was like, oh, geez. And I didn't know if I would have been actually in the film until I saw myself on screen, because there's always, you know, you can always get cut out at the last minute, especially in like a Peter Jackson film. There's never a guarantee you're in the film until you're in the film. So when I saw myself on screen, I was like, there's a lot that didn't make that cut, though. I mean, we filmed probably 4 days, and only one day made the cut.
Oh, wow.
So hopefully the Unicorn Edition will have the fight scene with me and Thorin.
Well, I'm going to watch it then, because, I mean, I've seen all the other ones. So So you said that you've gone to conventions for The Hobbit. Now, how does that feel to go to conventions? Like, do people, I guess I'm going to ask you, do people recognize you for The Hobbit, or do they talk about Spartacus, or do they want to talk Power Rangers, or is it everything?
Well, the one I remember, it was HobbitCon 4 in Bonn, Germany, and it was spectacular. It was like the largest Middle-Earth convention in the world, and these people were there just for Lord of the Rings, Middle-Earth, and The Hobbit, and I mean, I felt like a celebrity. I mean, I had people coming up, taking selfies with me in the hallway, and it was quite good. You know, I felt like, I don't know, Tom Cruise there for a while.
Now, you keep saying you're a big guy, people are looking for you, so you must have really fit in. I did watch your video, Ready to Die.
Yep.
How did you get involved in that?
That, I was in a film called Romeo and Juliet, A Love Song. I played Lord Montague. It's a trailer park rock opera made in New Zealand. All the dialogue is sung. It's not spoken at all, and it's based on Shakespeare's original text. So the director of that was doing a series of music videos for a breakout group in New Zealand, and he goes, I got just the guy. So you know, he called me in and goes, here's what I'm looking for, crazy Uncle D. And I'm like, okay, I can do that.
So how many days were on that set? I mean, I like the song. I'd never heard it before.
Yeah, it's you know, there's a lot of New Zealand music down here that's very popular here that just doesn't get airtime anywhere else in the world. But yeah, each video took like a day.
So you're in more than one video?
Yeah, we rack them out quite fast down here.
Hold on, you're in more than one of the videos for this band?
Yeah, I'm in three videos for the band. It's a trilogy that this director did. There's three videos for this. There's one for a group called Beast Wars. I've got videos, I've got music videos all over the place. That's how I supplement my income.
Well, it sounds like you don't even need it. You do voiceover work, you're in The Hobbit, you're in Power Rangers, you're going to conventions. Sounds like you're rocking.
I stay pretty busy. I also make props and costumes for my web series. So, I mean, I'm always out in the shed filled with glue and paint.
Well, let's get into your web series that you're making. Since you're here, we'll discuss everything I told you. Where'd your idea for the web series come from? Like, you're the costume designer now.
Yeah, no, it's not my web series. I'm just one of the stars. I play an orc warrior named Varuga. The concept came from the showrunner's two-year deep dive into World of Warcraft. And the premise basically is a group of MMO players wake up in the bodies of their avatars in the online game. And some of them are gender swapped. Some of them are younger than their characters. I'm a different race than my character. And it not only tackles the gaming aspect, but it really gets into a lot of the social, problems that we have in the world today. I mean, there's a big social commentary on that series.
So
without being pushy, of course.
No, not in any way. You're making costumes for this then?
Yeah, I do EVA foam weaponry. And I mean, if you look at season two of the web series, I made the big hammer that my character carries. I made shields. I made axes. And they're all out of EVA foam to make them set safe so we don't end up killing anybody, you know, killing any of our, you know, fellow actors with them. But they look real. I mean, they look metallic.
They do. I totally will say they do. I watched it. I didn't notice, but maybe it's just me. Now, do you cosplay too then, or make cosplay uniforms or anything like that?
I'm working on a Doctor Doom build right now that I'm going to start taking to our local conventions here. And it's a two-year project. You know, I'm still learning. I don't know a lot of the techniques that I need to know, so I'm learning and messing up and taking it apart and doing it again, and I'm learning how to do LEDs and Warbla and all the other stuff with it too. So, I mean, that's really going to help me in the future for, like, when we do AFK Season 3, because I can do more of the armor and stuff.
So, since you just brought up Doctor Doom, I'm going to have to ask about comic books.
Love them, man. Love them.
So what have you been reading then?
Actually, I don't have a whole lot of time to read now, but I mean, I grew up on the old Spider-Man, Fantastic Four. Didn't really get too much into Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. But I mean, I grew up on all these, you know, like silver and golden age comics that were laying around my house from, you know, family members. And, you know, I really enjoyed them. I'm also a huge, now former Dungeons & Dragons player since like the 1970s.
Oh, wow. So you're like a 6'2" geek. Is that the way I'm supposed to look?
Yeah, pretty much. I call myself a stealth geek. You know, I look like, I mean, I'm covered in tattoos and 6'2", 300 pounds, shaved head, big beard, and people are like, oh, you must be a biker. I'm like, no, I'm a nerd.
Oh, that's great. So I want to ask you, being a geek, why did you think of the Fantastic Four films?
I hated them, to be honest. I didn't like one of them, not a single one. This last one, Dr. Doom looking at the melty kind of, and I'm just like, nah, I'm done. I'm out of here. So, I mean, Dr. Doom is the most powerful anti-hero, I guess, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and you can't play him like that. I mean, he should be frightening, not stupid. And that, you know, that's why I wanted to do the Dr. Doom, you know, because there's very few quality Dr. Doom cosplays out there right now. There's a few that look like the last movie Dr. Doom, and it's just like, nah.
So I want to go back to your Roman Joe and Juliet movie you did. You have to sing in this.
No, little bit of a spoiler. We didn't actually sing. It was a lip sync.
Oh.
We had professional singers come in and do the vocals, and then we just lip synced along to them. And some of the footage, you can tell that the actors weren't really practicing doing lip sync, but hopefully I nailed my parts.
You did.
It's on Amazon. It's on Amazon if you want to check.
I saw a bit of it. I wrote, this guy can sing.
No, I can't sing. I try not to, if I can help it.
So,
there was a show we did here in New Zealand called Cover Band, and it was a group of local musicians trying to make it big, and they did a karaoke night at one of the local pubs. And they hired me to come in and dress in a black leather jacket and a headband and sing as horribly as I could. And if you've ever heard me sing in real life, that's not hard for me to do. I can't sing a lick. And it was the song from the band that I did. The band actually tweeted me the next day and said, "We have not stopped laughing. That was absolutely horrible." And I'm like, I was really trying not to be that bad. I was really trying, but it was like three octaves above where I can comfortably sing. So, I mean, the voice was cracking and I was way off key and out of tune. And they're like, "We just haven't stopped laughing. That was horrible." And I'm like, "Thanks."
That's great. So I guess this is maybe an actor question. Do you prefer features, shorts, micro shorts, web series, or just anything that pays?
You know, I like features for the exposure, because there's going to be a lot of people seeing that, and a lot of people seeing anything that I do translates into more work in the future. I like web series and all, you know, like that kind of stuff, simply because I think streaming and web series are the wave of the future. Nobody watches linear TV anymore. I mean, you don't sit down at 7 o'clock on Tuesday night to watch the A-Team anymore. Nobody does that. It's all Netflix and YouTube originals and stuff like that. And we're actually doing really well on YouTube monetizing the web series. So it shows we've got, I mean, we just passed 1 million views overall, like a month ago on the web series. So, I mean, we're all getting paid for this now.
That's awesome. I did watch a bit of it. I promise you I did. So you can have my click there, too.
Right. Season two, we had the thing about AFK, we did the first season for $15,000 New Zealand. And it was done on weekends. Nobody got paid. We all made our own costumes and props and stuff like that. And it was basically a group of people that had a story to tell, and we wanted to tell it, so we got together on weekends at a local park and we shot it. So the first season, you can see the limitations of the budget and stuff like that. Season two, we got full funding from New Zealand On Air and TVNZ for $300,000.
Wow.
So, I mean, that really brought up, we had actual stunt people this time. We had you know, craft services, we got actual food instead of bags of potato chips and lollies. yeah, but I mean, we had like multiple cameras running on season two, and yeah, it was a huge, big step up in production value and experience, just because we had that budget to do it. Season three, apparently we're going for $1.5 million.
Good for you.
Yeah, I really hope we can get it.
I
love this character. I really do. He's I don't want to give any spoilers, but he's a lot of fun to play.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, don't give any spoilers. Make them watch it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What do you look for yourself in the future?
You know, it's pretty much que sera, sera for me. If I can continue doing this until I can't physically do it anymore, I'll be good. I don't look at retiring anytime soon. I mean, I'm apparently 10 to 15 years away from retirement age. I don't want to retire. I don't want to stop doing this. If I can keep doing what I'm doing, I mean, I probably won't be able to still play the 6'2", 300-pound bad guy all the time. But, you know, I can play other roles equally as good. I mean, there's a lot of older actors that have moved on from the bad guy role to serious dramatic roles, and that's kind of what I want to do. I'd like to get into eventually directing and producing. And, you know, I've always got my workshop out there, and I'm getting pretty good at making the foam weapons and the armor. So, I mean, I've got stuff to keep me busy for at least 30 years.
Well, I did make some questions for you, because I know you've heard some interviews. So you ready for some fun questions?
I'm ready for some fun questions. Hit me up.
Okay. Your favorite movie and why?
My favorite movie and why would be Heavy Metal, the motion picture from 1979. It was insane. It was subversive. It was fun. It was dirty, funny, great soundtrack. I mean, I don't think I've ever fallen in love with a soundtrack past that.
Now, this would be a very different question. I don't know, because we didn't discuss any play work. A play of yours you would always want to be in but haven't been.
Oh, gosh. I don't have the stones to do live theater.
Okay.
It's a completely different animal than being on camera, because you get 3 to 4 chances to get it right. In front of a live audience, you get one. So I don't think that I'd be comfortable in front of a live audience.
Interesting. I find that hard to believe from you.
I mean, I've done like stand-up comedy in the past. I was a nightclub DJ for, you know, forever in Ohio. But it was not, you know, I have to remember these lines and hit this mark at this specific time, and there's just too much going on that I'm afraid anxiety would take over and I'd lose my mind. You know, with being a DJ, MC kind of thing, it's just free form. It's just scream into the mic and raise hell, basically. Stand-up comedy, I know what I'm doing, and I have to stand in one place and do it.
Fair enough. Your favorite way to watch a film, where would it be? What would you have to eat? What would the surroundings be?
Oh, gosh. You know, I watch a lot of stuff on Netflix anymore. My wife and I will, you know, we'll go upstairs to the lounge, and we got a really big screen up there, so we'll watch films up there just on the couch. Popcorn and chocolate, usually.
Well, there you go. When you go to the theater, where do you sit and why?
I have vision issues at times, well, all the time. So I like to be kind of center of the theater if I can. That gets the surround sound going. Just, I mean, it's like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory. It was like, yeah, yeah, in trying to find the best sound and the best visuals. And, pretty much center of the theater when I can.
Being a man of very big height like myself, have you ever got up and spoken to somebody and said, please be quiet?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have no problem with that. You know, it's, you know, you come to a theater and you're expecting them to kind of respect the people around them, not be dicks, excuse my language. We may have a car starting up here in a second. There it goes.
It's all good. Won't be the first time. Tell everybody where they can find your web series and where they can find your work and whatever else you want to tell them.
Okay, well, my web series, that's what I'm promoting most of all right now. It's called AFK, the web series. We're on YouTube. We're on a web series or a web content service called Starable, just starable.com. And just Google or just look up AFK Web Series, and you got everything we've ever recorded on that one playlist. We're on the Fantasy Network, and we're, of course, on Twitter at AFK Web Series.
Well, that's pretty easy to find. Well, I want to thank you for your time.
Yeah.
I hope you had fun.
Yeah, I had a great time, as always.
And thank you for coming on. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. See you, everybody.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.